Welcome back to Corinth in Your Car. I'm Josh. I am here with Luke and Adam. We're all back together. It's a good day to be back. It's Thursday, February 15th. The day after Luke's favorite holiday.
My favorite holiday, too, yeah.
It is my wife's favorite holiday, but it is not my favorite holiday.
So I have a question here. We'll go out of order here for a little bit. Valentine's Day celebrations. I know all three of us were here last night.
Correct. Yeah, we were.
So we were really celebrating real hard. So you also taught a lesson to your CLC class yesterday about the real history of Valentine's Day.
Legend of St. Valentine.
So talk to us about St. Valentine, Luke. I know you're excited to talk about him.
So way back in the day, Roman Empire, the story goes that...
Is he the naked baby?
No, that's Cupid. The story goes, way back in the history of the Roman Empire, there was an emperor who actually made it illegal for young men to be married because he wanted soldiers in his army who were going to fight with no reason to leave anything behind, right?
So
the theory that he had was if there were soldiers who were married, they would fight poorly because they wanted to avoid certain dangerous things so that they could go back home to their wives. So he's just like, well, let's just make it illegal for men to be married until they serve, all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so St. Valentine, a leader in the church, is like, well, no, marriage is like a holy sacrament.
Mm-hmm.
And so he didn't have the authority to do that. And so he performed illegal wedding ceremonies for young couples during that time. So that's kind of the...
Way to go, St. Valentine.
Nod to St. Valentine.
Originally not Hallmark, but it's kind of
Hallmark, so. Not those terrible tasting candies that have Be Mine on them and stuff like that.
Yeah, the chalk.
Yeah.
The chalk with writing on them. Right. Yeah.
Tums.
Yep. Yeah. Cool. So Valentine's Day came and went. The Super Bowl came and went. I'm sure you guys don't want to talk about that. So we'll go on to the next question. actually, I did find a Bible verse that talked about the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah?
Great.
Yeah.
Jesus, he actually predicted this in Matthew 13.
Okay.
Here's what he said. Whoever has will be given much more. They will have abundance. Whoever does not have, even what they have, will be taken from them. So,
there you go. Hey, look, in regards to Chiefs and 49ers, on Monday after the Super Bowl, the 49ers as a franchise are still winning the Super Bowl race 5-4.
That is true. Even still, hasn't been for 30 years.
Because it was 29 years ago, 30. So you would have been 8?
The only part of that game I even remember was I came home from Sunday night church and I saw that it was on TV. Mm-hmm. They beat the Chargers, like killed them, I think.
That was the Steve Young went off game. That was like 94.
Yeah. Yeah, it was 94.
95.
Yeah, that's before I was around.
Yeah, so I remember coming home and seeing it on TV and then going to bed, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So
nice.
I didn't watch it. It was our, I was at church with kids' stuff, and then my mom brought me home, and my dad, he might have had some college students over or something at that point. I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But
it was a good game.
Anyway.
Great game.
Yeah, it was fun to watch. Yeah.
Sunday's game was... fun is not the word that I would use.
Yeah, fun. No,
it's fun now. Good.
It's fun now for the two of us.
Yes.
I don't know what came over me, but whenever that touchdown was scored, and I'm going to put an image in the head of our listeners. The walk off touchdown. I kind of lost my mind a little bit.
And
about 10 seconds after it was after it happened, my shirt was off.
Ah!
I was just jumping around the house. Yeah. So there you go.
Hilarious!
Wow.
Reacted.
Image
that, it's an image, but
it is an image.
It's just like summer at the swimming pool, right? So,
just like it.
I was just like it.
Except
I but,
you didn't
but
have
the,
swimsuit
the whole
on.
Point is the whole point is I reacted as if I was the one who scored the touchdown.
Yeah,
I was watching. Those people don't even know who I am.
I may or may not have hoisted my 22-year-old son up in the air. So
I love it.
May or may
like
not.
Footloose style.
The Lion Kingdom.
Yeah, it was that. Yeah, I almost threw up at one point.
Yeah,
so I was sweating.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was, because so here's the and I know Josh, this is painful, but so halftime was not feeling great. You know, I should know.
Yeah, no,
I should know better by now.
Yeah,
I should know better. But so what I decided at halftime. So I made a huge mistake before the game. I didn't wear the same sweatshirt that I had worn
the other playoff games.
The other playoff games.
I was wearing the same one.
So I changed at halftime, and I put the sweatshirt on that that I had worn for the AFC Championship game, and then we started playing better. So all that goes to show that I played a huge role.
Yeah, you're right.
And so I hope that Clark Hunt is listening to this, and I hope I get a Super Bowl ring my part in helping to bring
I didn't sit down the entire fourth quarter or overtime.
Yeah.
So,
that's you know, I know Mahomes won the MVP, but I think Chris Jones is the one who wrecked the game, actually.
Chris Jones, special
Trent McDuffie.
Special teams. Yeah.
You know, it was special teams and Chris Jones, especially because at the end of the game, he blew
up that third and four.
He got the pressure that would have either got a first down or a touchdown and ran the clock out. And it would have been a way different possibility. So, that guy's a beast.
But Mahomes at 399 yards.
Yeah.
He accounted for 399 yards. And he is he's Thanos.
Inevitable.
Yeah. Unfortunately for the rest of us.
I was watching a little bit of the mic'd up coverage, and you know what 49ers player I just love so much?
Oh, Kittle.
George Kittle.
Yeah, he's fun.
He is hilarious.
You know what
mic'd up.
Did you hear the safety? I think it's Tashaun Gibson.
I didn't watch any of that.
So he said it was after the interception where Mahomes just threw a terrible ball. Mm-hmm. And he's like, that dude's just regular. He's just a regular quarterback. And so in the Super Bowl parade yesterday, Mahomes, whenever he was giving his speech, he's like, you know I'm just a regular quarterback, but
you can't get fuel to the fire. You just got to keep your mouth shut.
Petty
Mahomes. I like George Kittle. He just has fun.
Yeah, he does.
So what I like about him a lot is he just likes playing the game of football. So win or lose, he's happy to be out there. He just counts himself really blessed. And one of my favorite moments watching him was when he found the camera overhead. Mm-hmm. And he played rock, paper, scissors with everyone at home.
Yeah.
So it was fun. You know, that's good stuff to keep it in perspective. Okay. Good about that. Because, I mean, it really is meaningless at the end of the day, right? Kind of like Ecclesiastes. It's vapor.
It is.
Not that it means nothing. And we were talking about that before we went on air, really.
Right.
The word, and I realized I think I mispronounced it on Sunday. I said hevel instead of hebel. But anyway,
I think
it can be both.
Yeah, I've seen it spelled both ways.
Say anything confidently.
Yeah.
Say anything confidently. Yep. So hebel is vapor or smoke, and it's like that which looks solid, but it's not. And that, you know, football or relationships, money, salary, anything tends to be that. And so we're still talking about that all the way through Ecclesiastes. This week, we kind of shifted gears and talked about wisdom and how Ecclesiastes points us towards gaining wisdom. So before we jump into the actual message, when I say the word wisdom, I want to ask you, who do you think of?
Mm.
Who do you think of when you hear the word wisdom?
Jesus.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, someone not from the Bible.
Okay. Yeah. I would go to... I mean, I think of your dad, Josh, and I think of Alan Algren, one of my mentors. I think of guys that whenever I don't know what to do, that I'm texting or calling. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've got a list of those. You know, we were at this conference, and I will reference it here in a little bit, Next Level.
Yep.
And one of the things that Cam said he would do the same, I think, is what it was. I think it was in the same. I love the way he phrased it. I'm going to misquote it and just butcher it, but he's like, I would have a collection of old men.
Yeah.
Basically just old wise guys.
Like a Old Testament seers.
Yeah. You know, sages. Yeah.
Right.
You know, just guys in his circles that would be able to pour into him and give him wisdom whenever he needed it and be able to, I would create a collection of wise old men and seek the wise counsel of mentors who would invest in me, and then I would pay it forward by investing in young leaders and pastors of smaller churches. Yeah. So,
And really, I mean, you think about the story of the kingdom in Israel, and after Solomon, his son did not do that.
No,
it was he listened. He talked to the old guys, and they said, you know, treat your people kindly, serve them. Mm-hmm. And then the young guys are like, hey, if your dad was strong, you'd be stronger. If he was hard, be harder.
Yeah.
You know, and then he listened to the young guys, his peers, and the kingdom split.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who?
Yeah, who? I think of a lot of people.
Like Ollie?
Who?
Ooh.
Ollie.
Who?
Only the parents of preschool kids get that one.
Yeah, there we go. All right, Ollie is an owl, and he teaches lessons in, you know, tandem with our early childhood ministry. Yeah, Ollie's great.
Yeah, so Ollie. I think of Ollie. Ollie's got some wise sayings in there. No, I think of my parents. I think of some of the professors back at school that I was able to kind of have a relationship with. I think the two of you as well, just around Thursdays at 10 a.m., one of my favorite times in the world, because I get to sit down with two guys who are further and wiser than I am and somehow play a part in all of this too. So
yeah,
blessed by you guys as well. Lots of people to think about in this question.
Yeah, I think it's important that we have, Adam, like you said, those people who we can go to, that we don't just try to do life on our own. And one of those wise people is Solomon. It's the scriptures. It's this guy who literally had enough money to try every single thing he could. He didn't ever have to say no to anything. And he tried it all. And then he said, well, here's the meaning of life. Fear God, keep his commandments. And part of that is living wisely to fear God and keep his commandments. So we're going to talk about wisdom. And part three, we kind of looked at that topic, I guess, mostly from chapter 7 of Ecclesiastes, but then lots of other scriptures, Ecclesiastes, Proverbs, through. So give us a short summary, what the message was, just big takeaways, things like that.
Yeah, and so if you look at the premise of the book, you know, meaningless, meaningless, everything is meaningless kind of stuff. What's crucial to really understand is that he doesn't mean life isn't worth living. Mm-hmm. It's just learning to see things with proper perspective and stuff. And so we started off just kind of just setting it up. This came from Dave Gibson, the idea of really whenever you kind of start to get a grip on this meaningless thing, you fall into, there are two places you can go. One is escapism and the other is wisdom.
Yeah.
Escapism is just like, oh my gosh, this is so painful. I'm just going to numb it. I'm going to just whatever. I'm going to party. I'm going to do this, this, and this, and this, and not face the reality that, oh my goodness, my days are numbered. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just going to try to ignore that. That's escaping it. The other way is wisdom, which is Psalm 90, verse 12. Yeah. Teach us the number of our days so we can gain a heart of wisdom.
Yeah.
And really, you kind of have a comparison and a contrast of what we think of with the English word meaningless.
Right.
If life is just meaningless, you know, I am going to escape. Just numb the pain, whatever. And the Hebrew word hebel.
Yeah,
which we translate meaningless, which means it's vanishing. And so in light of that,
correct,
how should we live? Well, it's with wisdom.
Correct.
So, yeah. Luke, what about you, man? Any big takeaways from the message?
I appreciated the simplicity, but also just the helpfulness of the application outline. Just how do I get wisdom? Fear God, ask God, trust God. The thing that I'm thinking about is just that he's always the answer, right? He's the source of all wisdom. And so if we're seeking it, it's going to come from him.
I heard something recently, you know, Solomon says, don't look for meaning under the sun. And this communicator, he said, you got to actually look to the sun.
Yeah.
So it's not under the sun, S-U-N, it's to the sun, S-O-N, Jesus.
S-O-N.
You know,
or you could even go
above the,
you know, above the sun.
Above the sun.
Look at the creator.
The creator.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So. So some of the verses, Luke, I'm going to have you read Ecclesiastes 7:1-4. These are the verses that kind of launched us into the sermon. And then, let's start with that.
Okay, cool. A good reputation is more valuable than costly perfume, Dior. And the day you die is better than the day you are born. Better to spend your time at funerals than at parties. After all, everyone dies. So the living should take this to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for sadness has a refining influence on us. A wise person thinks a lot about death, while a fool thinks only about having a good time.
Man, a fool only thinks about having a good time. And that brings us back to this question, escapism versus wisdom. Fools are looking to escape and only have a good time. Why do you think escapism is so easy? And then what are some of the I mean, I think we could easily name some of the most popular escapes that we go to, but what are maybe some of the hidden ones or the sneaky escapes that we might not anticipate in life, especially as a Christian, perhaps even?
Well, I'll think about your first question is just why is escapism so easy to do? And I think because truthfully, if at the beginning, it's kind of fun, right? Like you kind of, okay, I want to numb or I want to go all in on something. You can actually have a lot of fun that will end up hurting you in the long run. That's the old quote. If you're, you know,
you're not having fun
while you're sinning, then you're sinning, you're doing it wrong or whatever. And so I'm just even thinking about, you know, you could get totally wasted at a parade and try to read "I've Got Friends in Low Places" in front of a giant crowd or something like that.
Yeah, like, just for instance,
that's escapism, and it's probably fun in the moment, but what does it really mean at all? And what's the quality over there? So
Taylor Swift's boyfriend.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was my first thought. Escapism at the start could actually be,
well, so,
you know, kind of fun in the moment, but detrimental later for sure.
Let's think about it like this. So we are living in a post-Christian culture where kids are being taught from the earliest days that you're here by accident. Okay. Wherever you fall on evolution and all those other kind of things, if you are a person who is a strict evolutionist, you are saying it's all by accident, that there was just the right amount of stuff that was there and it accidentally happened. Okay, you remove God from the equation and there is no meaning in life. It's go be a good person. Well, why should I be a good person? I mean, if it's survival of the fittest, then shouldn't I be the strongest? Shouldn't I be trying to get my way every single way I can? It's all about me, 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 me. I'm going to be here for 80, 90 years, and I got to leave. I mean, that's all I get. If there is no afterlife, you know, if I just die and I'm in the ground and I'm, you know, I become compost after that, there's no meaning. And so whenever you go down that train of thought to the full conclusion, it is depressing. And so what do we do? How do we get away from it? I got to numb it somehow. And so I got to escape from this pain, and I can escape through it, you know, through drugs, alcohol, sex, drugs, rock and roll, those kind of things. I think too, for some people, they try to escape it through moralism.
Yeah, I think that goes to the hidden escape. It's like, as a Christian, we escape.
Well, even I think
keeping all the rules.
I think even non-Christians do it. It's just like,
well, true.
You know, I'm just going to,
motivation's different. But
their motivation's different, but I'm going to try to escape this just by, you know, I'm just going to make sure I leave the world a better place. And thinking that you have an outsized impact than what you really do,
which is not necessarily one of the things Solomon says in Ecclesiastes, but it could also be listed as.
Yeah,
Apple.
It is.
You know, it doesn't last.
Well, I think he does say it. It's in chapter 1 and 2. Whenever it's generations come and generations go, nothing changes.
Yeah, somebody else is going to take up your work.
Somebody else is going to take
forget
up
about
your
you.
Work. They're going to forget about you.
That's right.
Unless you are a, you know, Alexander the Great type person, they're not going to talk about you in 4,000 years. They're not going to talk about you in 400 years. They're not going to talk about you in 100 years. And reality is, after you're gone, they're probably not going to talk about you after 40. And so that reality starts to hit us. And so it's like, okay, I got to escape. I got to escape. I got to escape. Got to get away from this. And so, yeah, I think that your normal suspects are there. Netflix, Hulu, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook. Instagram, TikTok, Snapchat, know,
Reddit, all the stuff,
whatever you can do to get a dopamine rush.
Yeah.
And it just kind of numbs the pain.
Yeah. And I would also, you maybe even throw in, hidden, maybe not hidden, but just like, accomplishments, achievements as well, right? Like promotions.
Yep.
I want to be successful and all that sort of stuff. You can actually, that can be an escape for some people.
Yeah, the escape is I'm going to bury myself in my work.
Right.
I'm going to bury myself in my, you know, financial worth. I'm going to bury myself in all these kind of things.
Yeah.
So we don't want escapism. We want wisdom. But what makes wisdom difficult to get? I mean, Proverbs says it pretty simply. It's like, hey, here's the beginning of wisdom. Just go get it. But what makes it difficult about getting it?
I think one of the most difficult things about getting wisdom is that you can't get it quickly.
Okay. Yeah.
You can be wise beyond your years, but you still can't get wisdom fast. You can get information fast. You can get knowledge quickly.
Yeah.
But to actually be able to become wise requires knowledge plus experience.
That's good, because we live in a very... an information age where we can get whatever knowledge we want super quickly.
Yes.
And we kind of think we can download wisdom.
P90X for wisdom. You know, and I want a 90-day program for wisdom. And it's like...
artificial intelligence wisdom.
Yeah, I don't... That's not possible. You can get knowledge and you can put yourself on the path for wisdom in 90 days. But, you know, it's continuing. We grow in wisdom. And it takes time.
Yeah, I would even throw in
an experience. Like, if you might be able to read a book and say, I know what to do if this happened, right? And you may know the information, but then that happens, and then you realize that book didn't get me anywhere.
Right.
You know, and so it isn't until you've gone through that thing and walked that thing that it's like, okay, well, now that experience happened. That time has seasoned me a little bit more. And so when that comes again, I have wisdom in that regard.
Yeah. Adam is bursting to say something.
Because I can't remember exactly what you just said, but it just reminded me of this too. It's like, we are really bad at reflection.
Okay.
And so, we don't reflect on what we've learned. So it's not just experience that brings about wisdom. It's evaluated experience. Yeah. It's reflected experience. And so what happens is, you know, we can have all the right experiences that could get us onto the path of wisdom, but because we don't evaluate them, because we don't reflect on them, we don't ever really grow in wisdom. It's like a harsh statement that was said to a buddy of mine, because he was hopping around churches. Okay, so he was in ministry, isn't ministry, and his longest stay at any church was like 3 years. Talking about a guy that's been in ministry for probably 25, 27 years now. And he was told straight up, because he said, yeah, I've got about 20 years experience in ministry at this point. And the guy looked at him and says, no, you don't. You have three that you've repeated six times. Whenever it comes to wisdom, it's like, I've got all these experiences, and so I'm wise. It's like, no, you're not. You've had all these experiences, but you haven't reflected on one. You know, you've been a Christian for 40 years, but really you've got 2 years of Christianity that you've repeated 20 times.
Yeah.
That's a danger for sure. I loved one of the lines in the sermon, Adam, you said,
that sounded harsh.
It was harsh, but true.
One of the lines you said in the sermon was a casket is a better preacher than a cradle.
That was good.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. So that is a tweak on a line. It may have been Gibson.
I read it in Gibson.
Okay. It was a tweak on that, because he said a cot, and I was like, why would you say a cot?
Yeah.
Because he's from England.
Oh. Okay.
He's across the pond.
Yeah, gum Brits. I mean, come on. But a casket is a better preacher than a cradle. And I love that concept.
Yeah.
So his idea of, whenever somebody's born, it's all about their potential.
Yeah.
And who are they going to become? But at the funeral, it's who did they become?
Yeah.
And so that's why Solomon is saying, the day you die is better than the day you're born.
Yeah.
He's not saying that it's just better to be dead.
Right.
What he's saying is that it is a better teacher. It's the reputation, all the things that kind of come out there, it's a better indicator of who you really were. I just thought that was brilliant.
So here's just an idea popped into my head right now. You said evaluated experience is better.
Yes.
And Ecclesiastes can sometimes confuse us, because we read something like meaningless. I thought God wanted meaning, or the day of death, what? And often I think it's because we haven't reflected long enough on the scriptures. And I just, I was trying to find a new reading plan, you know, for what we advertise and things. And one of them I was looking at this morning, it said, set aside 20 minutes to read Ecclesiastes 12.
Okay.
Like the last chapter. It's like 20 minutes.
20 minutes.
I read the whole book in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But that just revealed something in me like, what if I did take 20 minutes to read that one chapter?
Yeah.
What if I reflected on that enough?
Yeah.
Maybe I would actually get what Solomon's talking about
right.
a little bit more. So, just an encouragement to y'all out there. Sometimes you do need to slow down and read the scripture slowly.
Mm-hmm.
So, man, Proverbs 4, referenced this earlier, but I love how it's written. Here's the beginning of wisdom. Go get wisdom. Sounds pretty simple, but how do we do that? We're shifting now to sort of the application part of the message, and it all comes down to God, not surprisingly. Fear God, ask God, trust God. So let's talk about fearing God first. Luke, I have this verse. Will you mind reading these verses? I didn't tell you that, but Ecclesiastes 12:13. All right. So Ecclesiastes 12:13. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, here it is. That's the whole story. Here now is my final conclusion. Fear God and obey his commands. For this is everybody's duty. Ecclesiastes 12:13, NLT, screen and notes.
I'm just glad you didn't get distracted with duty.
Yeah,
I think you were almost distracted with duty.
No, I wasn't.
I was too.
All right. Duty. So duty is there, but we're too comfortable. Adam, you said in the sermon often, why don't we fear God? Well, because we're too comfortable with him.
Mm-hmm.
So why has our why has our culture made it so easy for us to be comfortable with God?
Do we revere anything anymore?
That's a good point.
No.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I'm trying to think.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We may hold things in high respect, certain things, but revere is even above and beyond that.
So I think cynicism and sarcasm has cut so deep into our culture. I think, Adam, what you're talking about, I didn't think about that till you said it. But you think about, and even you've talked about this before, Luke, the humor of Gen Z is cynical. It's self-deprecating. It's shaming.
It's dark.
It's dark.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big point. We don't review.
And it was like that with Gen X too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about millennials.
The millennials don't have a sense of humor.
No,
I'm just kidding.
Everything's deathly serious. There we go, Gen X. So if you look at reverence, you know, it's a feeling of profound awe and respect and often love, an act showing respect, especially a bow or a curtsy. I don't think anybody's ever done that. It's deference, profound, adoring, awed respect. And awed, not ODD, but awed.
Uh-huh.
Respect. I don't know that we revere anything.
That's a good point. Yeah.
If you're listening to the podcast and if you can think of something that we actually revere, shoot us a note, man.
Taylor Swift.
Do we?
No.
I don't.
That's what I'm just saying. Do we? Maybe there is a place to where we put some of our...
And I don't just say Taylor, but I mean certain celebrities you might put them on a status.
Yeah, to where there's an awe. I don't know that there's a respect.
I don't know.
Just thinking through this out loud.
Yeah.
We don't have reverence for political offices anymore.
No, that's gone.
That's gone.
Mm-hmm.
We have
reverence for the idea of a great political leader. But when it comes to
the actual office, we don't.
There's cynicism and there's mud slinging and all sorts of stuff.
So this is interesting because I think it's kind of hitting at some of the point that's being made in Ecclesiastes is I think it's overall a negative thing that we've lost some reverence for stuff.
Mm-hmm.
However, when you think about what has been revered in history, all of those things are nothing but
smoke.
Hebel, right? Like so we once held reverence for political offices. We once held reverence for certain different things.
Mm-hmm.
And come to find out, when we only revere those things or when we only focus on these things, we're left disappointed again and again and again.
There is a jadedness in our culture. And so, Josh, I'm going to quote your dad loosely because this is going back probably 25, 27, 20,
I have a college years.
28 years. So I remember him talking in one of the classes I was sitting under, just talk because I think your dad is a young Gen Xer, if I remember right.
Yeah, probably. Born in 63, so whatever that is.
Yeah, so he's right, maybe right at the end of the boomer. And but anywho.
Maybe.
He was talking about how that generation, so his generation was, I can't remember the verb he used. We'll just use messed over because I can't remember what it is. By the three P's.
Okay.
The president, Richard M. Nixon, preachers, because of all the scandals, and then parents because of the widespread divorce rate at that point.
Yeah, which was a direct result of the sexual revolution.
Correct.
And it has failed us entirely.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so that created a jadedness in that generation that has been passed along to their children. It was caught by my age group. I mean, Gen X is just known as the missing generation. You look at all the charts that anybody ever talks about in generations, we don't even get mentioned. It's just like there's a gap of...
You're the middle child of generations.
Yeah, they're like, oh, yeah.
That's so good.
It is. It's because it's boomers and millennials.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, yeah, there's Gen Xers. You know? Yeah, yeah, we've got a
When did he get here?
Yeah, when
that
did he get here?
Hilarious.
Yeah. But so that leads to jadedness. And then, you know, I look at what would it be, Luke? Is it Gen Z that's next after millennials?
Yep.
When do they start? Is that like 2000?
So basically me. I'm kind of like the hybrid of...
You're a millennial.
I could be a millennial or a Gen Z. Okay. Kind of the marker is the...
Is it 9/11?
It's 9/11 and cell phones. So if you don't remember 9/11, you are Gen Z.
Okay.
If you remember 9/11, then you're a millennial.
Okay,
much.
There you go. And so that was part of my thinking there is so... Gen Z has been brought up in a world post 9/11 to where lots of jadedness, doubt, fear, unhealthy fear, uncertainty. Then you throw in the smartphone generation, which shows every bit of teen anxiety, social disorders, and all these other kind of things. It all happens to peak right around 2012. What happened then? Oh, that was the tipping point of the iPhone.
Yeah.
And that's when just about everybody ended up getting an iPhone.
Right.
Yep.
So this is a long-winded answer to the thing of why do we struggle with fear of God? And it's because we don't know how to have reverence or fear for anything. We are skeptical to a fault. It's not a healthy skepticism of, hey, show me some proof or something, you know.
Yeah.
It is just we are skeptical to a fault. We are always waiting for someone to fail. Okay. Going back to football. Apologies.
Oh, absolutely. No, I was going there too. It's like
Patrick Mahomes has a blow up in week 12 against the Bills. First time he's ever lost his mind on screen. He's yelling at referees. And people just were like, boom, we knew he wasn't perfect.
Sure.
And they just piled on. You know, it's like he'd been, quote unquote, perfect for 6 years. But it's like, oh, see, this is who he really is. So there's – and we do that with celebrities. We're just like, man, we're just waiting for that shoe to drop, waiting for that to come out.
Canceled.
And yes.
Canceled.
So why is it difficult to fear God? We don't know how to fear anything. We don't have reverence for anybody. And so as a culture, it's not something that we practice. At all. And so it is a skill. Is that the right word?
A skill to develop a fear, like a reference. I think it is.
Is it a practice, a habit, a rhythm?
All of
those things. Yeah. They're kissing cousins, kissing as you cousins. Like that phrase, right, yeah. Luke?
What? Why are you telling me? Not once have I said I like that phrase, have I?
Really?
I don't know.
I thought we said it one time. You're like, what?
Yeah. Okay, there we go.
It's an Arkansas thing.
Yeah. Kissing cousins.
Kissing cousins.
So, kind of related to that is, you know, I did hear Cam, once again to reference him, Huxford at the conference. This really hit me when he said Christians from Iran said that they cannot go to America and stay very long because they will be, quote, lulled to sleep.
Yeah.
Did you all hear him say that?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, so how does that relate to this whole fear of God discussion that some of it's that we're jaded, but some of it's because we're just lulled to sleep?
Well, it's the escapism that it's potentially, I think we could say it's difficult to have reverence and fear whenever you're just comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and too, like you begin to look at this, it really is potentially an American cultural thing that has actually taken God and I don't know that I want to say false version of Christianity, but or something along those lines. But we've taken him and we've turned it into an escapism of itself. Mm-hmm. And so we're paying attention to verses in Scripture where Jesus says, "Come to me, all of you who are tired and weary and laden, mm-hmm. and I will give you rest." We look at verses where Jesus says, "My yoke is easy and my burden is light." Mm-hmm. And we adapt all of those. Mm-hmm. We look at 4:13, "I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength."
Yep.
And so we become comfortable with the promises of Scripture in those regards, but we seem to neglect the mission that God has called us to, the practice of confession that actually heals us, the fact that if we are really following Christ, that there's going to be some adversity that comes our way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's almost like in our culture, what we've even are guilty of doing sometimes with faith is adapting some comfort around it. And the truth is, Christianity should make you feel uncomfortable because it puts you in a position to be mistreated and hated and all that sort of stuff. And even in the midst of that, God promises, "I'll be with you," which is great news. I think we can even use Christianity itself as an escapism, which makes us too comfortable.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And then it's hard to become come out of that because we've convinced ourselves that it's the gospel.
Well, and so we've created, and there is a discussion that we could have. We don't have to have it now, but like with the He Gets Us campaign.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Which is pre-evangelism, trying to do great stuff. Mm-hmm. So don't hear, but there is a projection of Jesus. And I got to credit a pastor named Josh Howerton who does.
So he's good. Yeah.
Some great stuff.
Yep.
He had a great thread on this on Instagram, just kind of like giving some caution of, you know, whenever we show Jesus pictures of Jesus with people who, you know, identify as, you know, transgender, women getting abortions, activists for ungodly causes, and then say Jesus didn't teach hate.
Correct. Yep.
The progressive culture, this I'm quoting him, they're gearing the ad to is assuming that their definition of hate.
Uh-huh.
Which is non-affirmation.
Yep.
Okay, that's the definition that the progressive culture uses. And so, for example, if you don't affirm my lifestyle or my identity, you are practicing hate. And so as a result, this is what he says, people see the ad and think, cool, it doesn't require any change, any repentance for me and Jesus to be good. Mm-hmm. So add Jesus says, and Luke, this is just what spurred this in my brain, add Jesus says, "I don't condemn you, and that's all I have to say."
Mm, sure.
Real Jesus says, "I do not condemn you. Go and sin no more."
John chapter 8.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah.
And the culture likes add Jesus more.
Yeah.
And so that's that form of cultural Christianity that doesn't really exist a whole lot more, but it's this cultural picture of Jesus that you don't have to revere a Jesus like that because he's good with everything.
Sure.
He's like, "I don't condemn you." Awesome. Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. So that means I don't have to change anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it swings both ways, as it always does, because there's that side, which I think is too far on the grace side. Mm-hmm. But there is also
the tension.
A side that's way too far on the truth and condemnation side.
Absolutely.
And so you look at the character of Jesus, and it's like, well, yes, Jesus loved sinners.
Absolutely.
No matter what they were dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted them to experience relationship with him.
Yep.
And so he's calling them to something better.
Correct.
And it's up to them whether or not they choose it.
Yeah.
And,
because
and so, it's what I see. What I see in just kind of all of that sort of stuff is what's being portrayed is really a social justice Jesus.
Yeah.
And Jesus did do some social revolution, no doubt.
Absolutely.
But it was biblical.
It was.
And it was better. Yes. And so you got to figure out how to balance that truth and grace the best. And there are some good things in,
absolutely,
in those commercials, no doubt.
Absolutely.
But not all of those things.
Because the goal of those commercials is to try to start a conversation.
Well,
which
and
is
that's
awesome.
Where that's
which
where
is fantastic.
Praise the Lord for that.
That's
absolutely.
What I was gonna say. We have to come in on that and
yes.
follow up those conversations because nothing is complete because you still, yes, you have the John 8 Jesus, but you also have Jesus that was actually accused of being drunk.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Because he hung out with, you know, drunkards.
Yeah.
And
he washed
out in places.
He
so, yeah.
washed the feet of unrepentant sinners. His name was Judas. I mean,
right.
He washed Judas's feet. So
yeah.
it's about starting the conversation.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, this is what's so hard about trying to do a 30-second ad whenever there are more people
yeah.
watching that. Did you catch this? More people watch the Super Bowl. That's the largest viewing audience since the landing on the moon.
Wow.
Wow.
That's how big the audience was for this particular Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Taylor Swift. And so the difficulty of a 30-second ad and trying to do all those kind of things. And so I applaud them for what they're trying to do. And I think that it's where we have to remember it. That is a water cooler starter.
It is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, and that's where we've got to be able to come along in and be able to say, well, you know, Jesus didn't teach hate. Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. But let's make sure we're using the same definition here.
For hate.
Yeah.
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 Right.
So fear God.
So we should fear God. Yeah.
If we spend as much time on nice. Every single application point, this podcast will be 2 hours.
It is.
So we'll be
challenging Carrie Newhoff.
We'll go a little faster on these other ones. But yeah, we got to fear God, which starts with reverence.
Mm-hmm.
True wisdom mm-hmm. is not the knowledge we amass by books or podcasts. But it's
but you should still listen to this one.
To God.
You should. You will become so wise.
Yeah. We're just going to call it wisdom in your car now.
Yeah.
Okay, so we fear God. But then we got to ask him as well. So Luke, you're the reader again. So Proverbs 2.
Now Solomon is the reader or teacher or preacher
well,
or whatever.
Yeah,
no, sure. I'm just kidding. Proverbs 2, 3 through 6.
Yes, sir.
All right, here we go. Cry out for insight and ask for understanding. Search for them as you would for silver. Seek them like hidden treasures. Then you will understand what it means to fear the Lord, and you will gain knowledge of God. For the Lord grants wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding.
Love that. I love just how active it is. Like, cry out for it. Go looking for it. Search for them as you would for what? For silver
right.
or for hidden treasure. So, like, this is a mission. You're on mission here to get wisdom. So when you think about your mission to get wisdom, what are some prayers maybe that you have prayed or people you've gone to or places that you've gone to get you in the zone, I guess, to hear from God?
I think it's key, the word hear, mm-hmm. because I think one of the ways that I've had to grow over the last several years is I read, and the next verse that Adam read in the sermon is James 1:5, if any of you lacks yeah. wisdom, you should ask God who gives it. And so it was really easy for me to read that verse and get excited and then go, God, give me wisdom. God, give me wisdom. God, give me wisdom. God, give me wisdom. But then to never actually create the space to hear from him.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I think that's the next step is ask and then, receive. And in order to do that, you actually have to be quiet and listen, which is a hard thing to do. But that's
so is that,
what you got to do.
Is that by yourself at a table, at a desk? Do you take a walk? Do you go outside? Do you pray facing east on your knees?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's in the day-to-day quiet that I find in my rhythms. For others, it might be something else, mm-hmm. you know?
So here's a great question. We actually spent a little bit of time at the beginning of our elders meeting this week. I just asked this question. So whenever you hear from God, how do you hear from him?
Good.
What does it sound like? What does it sound like? So 30 seconds or less. What is it for y'all?
Yeah, I think when the Spirit speaks to me, it is usually it's usually the voice of truth in my head.
Yep.
So there's and that's the clarification. It's the voice of truth. Because there might be some other voices that sound similar that are saying something that isn't helpful and is actually more harmful. And so because of that, I know that it's not the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And so when there is a voice that's speaking something truthful, and to go back even to this, maybe even asking me or saying something that makes me uncomfortable,
I know that that's the voice of God because he's calling me to something better in those moments. So,
yeah, for me, I think a couple of different ways. I think it's when maybe just general instruction. I think it's when I do slow down whenever I read the scriptures enough and I'm just really like, hey, trying to make connections and things like that. But it's also, I've noticed a lot of times if I'm just driving and instead of trying to listen to that podcast or that music or whatever it is, sometimes I'll get promptings.
Sure.
Like maybe it's, and this happened yesterday. I was just driving and I saw a business that someone works at. I thought I need to check in on them. And so I texted them and they were like, oh man, that meant so much. And I think there's some of that too.
Yep.
But when it comes to big decisions, I think that more space is required.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for me, since I'm an outdoor kind of person, I like to just go and maybe it's an hour long hike or something like that, where there's some space is intentionally created.
Right.
For the biggest of decisions, I'm not super good at this, but fasting and other aspects of prayer.
Fasting has been really helpful for me in big decision types of moments because it doesn't necessarily, for me, my experience with fasting is it's not necessarily creating space for God to speak audibly or in my voice, but it is creating space for me to be prayerful and communicate in worship that God, you are all that I need.
Yep.
No matter what, you are all that I need. And so the big decision's coming. No matter how this plays out, you are all that I need. You are all that I need.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Adam, when you hear God?
It's generally probably one of two things, maybe three. There will be a thought come into my head.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like a whisper. It's not like an audible voice or anything like that. It'll just be like a phrase, a prompt.
Yep.
Sometimes it is through somebody else's voice box.
Yep.
Yeah, through people.
Through people.
For sure. Sometimes it's what you say.
And sometimes it's through my own voice box. Mm-hmm. Whenever I'm saying something to somebody else and it's just like, oh, wait a second.
Did I just say that? That was good.
That wasn't for me. Or that wasn't for them. Yeah. That was for me.
Yeah.
I've noticed, so now that you say that, I've noticed that in parenting, you'll say things to your kids because you know it's the right thing. And then you're like, oh, but I need to act that way too. So,
yes.
So, yeah, absolutely. So we got to ask God. And a good habit or practice would just be finding a lot of different ways you can ask. So, you know, maybe it's certain prayers you can pray. We'll get to this later. But the challenge is just going to be to ask God for wisdom in situations. James 1:5 is that, you know, that verse, if you lack wisdom, ask for it. So find a way to ask every single day. But just all these different questions. Maybe it's about a situation or a person or your own life. Find ways to ask every single day. Then when you do ask, you got to trust God because Luke, Ecclesiastes 7:13. All right. You trust God because?
Accept the way God does things. For who can straighten what he has made crooked?
All right. We've said this before that sometimes we think we would run the universe differently, but we don't have a universe. God does. And who can straighten what he's made crooked? That's hard to accept sometimes that things we see in our life seem crooked. We think that they should go differently. But God and his sovereignty and his wisdom has not changed them. And that's hard to accept. One of the reasons, Adam, you pointed out, is because often we see God as either an assistant or a consultant. This may be asking a similar question that we've already asked, but why is it so easy to see God as such? Does it come back to the lack of reverence?
Probably, but so I think we can also just couple in maybe it is it comes down to the lack of understanding the greatest theological truth in mankind, which is there's a God and it's not me.
Yeah.
I think that we all unintentionally or maybe intentionally put ourselves at the center of the universe. And so we go to Buddy God whenever we need help. And if the help he offers is help that we don't necessarily want, then we just disregard it.
Yep.
or we get upset that our assistant isn't doing what we asked them to do.
We turned him into, this is a conversation I had with the CLC students, we turned him into a good luck charm.
Yeah.
Is really what we've done.
Yeah.
Because they were asking about, like, you know, I didn't study for this test and now I'm worried about it. And so beforehand, I'm going to pray.
Uh-huh.
Is God going to help me? I mean, maybe, but what have you actually done with God in this moment? You've tried to manipulate him into giving you what you want, even though it's not what you
need. How would you feel if someone treated you that way, right? Like, they never did a single thing for you and then came and said, hey, dude, can I have $100?
Well, and I think, you know, part of that is, I think depending on where we are in our journey, in our relationship, in our maturity, I think sometimes God does just go, you know what? I'm a good dad.
Yeah.
I'm going to take care of you right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I think where we get disappointed is whenever he is allowing us to go through some certain things because we're reaping what we're sowing or, and we're just like, well, why isn't he rescuing me from this? And it's because in his wisdom, he understands.
Or it's not even that we're reaping what we're sowing. It's just good for us.
Right.
You know, it's the age old example of a parent taking their kid to get a shot.
Mm-hmm.
That 2-year-old has no clue what that shot means.
And
we're not reaping what we're sowing.
Right.
It's just a good thing for us.
Correct.
Well, really, this has always been the way that God has acted. Mm-hmm. If you read the Old Testament over and over and over again, God sends Israel into hard things.
Mm-hmm. Some of it
was reaping what they were sowing. But he sends them into hard things. And sometimes they cry out for years. And years before he actually says, okay, you've gone through it enough. You've learned what you needed to learn. Mm-hmm. And so now I'll act. And so it's similar.
Adam, I love these two questions. I just called them heart check questions.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, am I willing to do whatever God says in Scripture, whether I agree with it or not?
Mm-hmm.
That is huge.
Yep.
Because we've talked about before. Yeah, I'm willing to surrender everything to God except sex and money.
Right.
You know, like that's generally the two that it kind of comes to.
Yeah.
Second one, am I willing to accept anything God sends? Anything that happens in that area, whether I understand it or not.
Yeah.
So, man, two really tough questions, but really good questions.
Yeah, those are the trust questions.
They're trusting God,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Do you trust me?
Yeah. And that's why I love the way Ecclesiastes 7 just starts off, accept the way God does things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's trust.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to trust that God has a plan. He has a reason for this. And it's not to harm me. It's not to make my life.
Yeah.
It's so that my trust will increase.
I've heard Keller say this before. I know other people do, but he's just said, you know, there's a lot of ways in which God acts when you say, I don't know why he's doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what we know. We know why it's not. We know that it's not because he doesn't love us. Like, we know that he loves us. So we at least know that it's not because he doesn't love us.
Correct.
So use a double negative.
Correct.
We might not know why, but we do know it's not because he doesn't love
correct.
Us.
So, we know what the answer cannot be.
Correct.
It can't be that he doesn't love.
Yeah. So wisdom is a key to adding meaning to a life that's vaporous, you know? And God tells us how to get wisdom, fear God, ask God, trust God, a great outline, 3 great steps. The bottom line was wisdom is found
mm-hmm.
by those determined to find it.
Mm-hmm.
So just like a treasure hunt, you're probably not going to stumble across something really, really great more than you go look for it. So tell us about the challenge, Adam. It's praying for wisdom every day. So give us some ideas about how we can do that creatively.
Yeah, I think everybody walks into, you know, this building with a different area of life to where they need help. And so it's just trying to get specific and just, you know, God, give me wisdom to whatever, you know, give me wisdom whenever it comes to raising my, you know, teenage kids or give me wisdom on how to extend an invite or share my faith with my one. Mm-hmm. Give me wisdom, you know, on how to start better handling my money, you know, those kind of things. And so it's just what's one area of life that you feel like you could use some extra dose of wisdom in? And ask God for it.
Yeah. And James 1:5 is going to be that verse that we can remind ourselves of every day.
And then believe he's going to give it to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one of the ways that you can accept this challenge, if you're a parent, is to come out on a Wednesday night for Fearless Parenting.
Hey,
right?
There you go.
Pretty soon.
So yeah.
Get on out here for that.
February, as you listen, the next Wednesday will be the 21st, but then it starts the 28th. So, yeah, Tim and Mary Bolin. The way I've told people is just, I have never been disappointed sitting in their teaching. I always learned something that I was planning on learning, and I always learned other things that I wasn't planning on learning.
That's good.
And they're just fun. Yeah. They're just good people. So, come on out for that. Anything else to add before we wrap up today? Okay. So yesterday was Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. Solomon also wrote the Song of Solomon. So we're going to have a quiz in the – just kidding. We're not going to do a Song of Solomon quiz. I was going to say, Song of Solomon or Pickup Line.
Yes.
We'll do something a little easier. I think both of you will probably get 100% on this.
Confidence, man.
Yeah, man. This is Gandalf or King Solomon?
Oh, gosh.
Oh, I don't know.
All right. Who said it? And you can play at home, too, you Lord of the Rings fans. So even a fool is thought wise.
That's Solomon.
Even a fool is wise in his own eyes.
Yeah, that's Solomon.
It is. It is Solomon. All right. A merry heart. Whoopsie. I clicked on accident. A merry heart makes for cheerful countenance.
That's Solomon.
It sounds KJV-ish.
Yeah, it is. Solomon, yeah. Many that live deserve death, and many that die deserve life. How can you give it to them?
That would be Gandalf.
Gandalf.
It is Gandalf.
Yeah.
Okay. All of the rivers run to the sea, yet the sea is not full.
Ooh.
This is perhaps the hardest one.
That is Solomon.
What do you say?
I'll trust senior pastor over here. Go with Solomon.
All right. Senior pastor got it right.
Yeah, there you go.
Ecclesiastes 1 or 2.
All right. Despair is only for those who see the end beyond all doubt.
Sounds like Gandalf to me.
It is. It's Gandalf, yeah. Okay. All we have to decide is what to do with the time given us.
Ooh.
That sounds like Solomon's philosophy, but in the words of Gandalf. So,
I'm going to say Solomon. You're going to go Gandalf?
I'll go Gandalf here.
Okay. All right. We got Gandalf. Yeah. It's Gandalf. Yes. Yeah.
Because it's basically Solomon's message of Ecclesiastes, but it was said in the Gandalf way.
Oh, easy. As iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens a friend.
Yeah.
Okay. There is nothing like looking if you want to find something.
That's Gandalf.
I think that's Gandalf.
That's Gandalf. Yeah. And there we go. That is all of the questions. Hopefully you did well at home, too. You both are winners because you root for the Chiefs. And I'm a loser because I don't.
Josh, you're not a loser.
I'm just kidding.
You're not a loser.
It was a fun season.
Kyle Shanahan, maybe, but Josh Moore is not.
I was thinking about that. The only people he's lost the Super Bowl to is Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady.
Yeah.
So, and I don't think he was responsible for this loss. I think it's special teams.
Well, he threw his defensive coordinator under the bus and fired him yesterday.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't like that. But anyway, it's a good conversation. Hope you're having a good week.
As a Chiefs fan, beating the son of Mike Shanahan twice in the Super Bowl, it's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's a good dude. And
not that we hold grudges.
No. Never. Never.
Good week. And hope you all are having a good week wherever you listen to this. And we hope to see you Sunday. As always, we hope to have you back in the car or wherever you listen next week as well as we wrap up the series. So it's going to be week 4 next week, 1 foot in the grave,
and
it's going to be a great conversation. So we love you and like you, and we will see you then.